What's up, everybody? On today's episode, I got a chance to sit down with Danielle Molden. She shares her journey being a mother, as well as earning her CDL license and driving for BioBus, and being a program coordinator for the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. We also discuss her role as an elected board member for the Mobile Lab Coalition. The Mobile Lab Coalition supports STEAM education worldwide. Join us as we have an inspiring conversation about art, science, and education.
We have a very special guest, and today we have Danielle Molden joining us today. We're super excited to have her. Then before we begin, Danielle, can you just give a brief background about who you are before we dive in?
Sure. Currently, I work as a program coordinator here at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. I'm also on the board for a mobile lab coalition that helps provide STEM access to communities all over the world. I'm originally from Ohio, but my journey has taken me to New York and now into Denver, and who knows where the next adventure will be.
Great. So let's talk about just the upcoming. So originally from Ohio.
Yeah.
Can you just explain, because I'm always curious about people going from different cities to different cities, and how do you even get there? So can you talk about your childhood growing up and then how you even got to New York?
Sure. I actually am a product of our wonderful foster care system. So in the beginning, I have been in and out of foster care, which is vital to our story, right? To see where we were before and where we are now and how that journey has taken place. But originally, I was in foster care. When I was 13 or so, I did get adopted by a family there in Ohio. And I lived there until I was about 30 or so, but I do have a young son who's also a brown little boy, and the opportunities and the things that he was interested in, Ohio just wasn't able to give us the things that he needed to be the best person that he could be. We needed more opportunities. So the chance to move to New York City through a series of events had happened, and we just did it. I'm either a risk taker. I just had to trust that I could do it and make it happen. So as a single mother of a five-year-old, we packed up and moved to Brooklyn, New York. I do have a CDL, which is also kind of vital because I feel like I will always have a job no matter what happens. And that's vital to how we got to where we are as well. So when we moved to New York City, I started working, driving a truck first, but then I found a mobile lab, which was a biology lab on wheels. And it started out as they needed another driver. I have some management experience, and then it kind of turned into a job that hadn't been before but was now, to kind of coordinate, do logistics, figure out how to drive a massive like 55-foot vehicle around New York City, and then just make things easier for us to be able to provide that STEM access for kids all over New York.
Wow. So. Wow. That's crazy. Wow, CDL.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be nervous with just driving in the big U-Hauls. I can't even imagine doing anything bigger.
Yeah, some of it is confidence, and then some of it is just having a really great teacher. And honestly, like I said, I've been a single mom for the majority of my child's life, and having that CDL always ensures that I will be able to have a job and to be able to provide for him. So, and now my jobs have been like a mix of this manual labor, driving a truck, and also like office work. So it's a really strange, like niche job that I do.
Okay. And so let's talk about New York.
Sure.
There's always so much interest in New York. And I'm just curious, yeah. What was your experience like in Brooklyn? How was that?
I lived in Park Slope, Brooklyn. It was very interesting. And of course, we struggled a little bit. We didn't have family there. We had a friend or two in the area, but we struggled a little bit. But I mean, eventually you find the groove of it. And it's something about moving to New York City that really proves to you who you are. Like, do you have the ability to make this work? New York City will make or break you. And a lot of it is the willpower and the hustle. We hustle in New York, right? And actually, yeah. I fit in really well. I just started doing things and making things happen, to be able to provide for, not just provide for me, but provide for my son. And then once I kind of fell into the job at BioBus, I loved it. And that was my life, for 3 years or more, just getting science out there, meeting new people. I end up being a program coordinator for another small nonprofit, driving a bookmobile, And I would just do those kind of jobs simultaneously. But BioBus was a great place. There was a lot of opportunity for me to be able to bring my child and give him a lot of access to scientists and people who love their jobs, and like bridging those gaps between like the theoretical science and then meeting people who are actually doing the science. And they're very supportive of having Black and Brown people. We have people there who solely speak Spanish, so that language is no longer a barrier. So that was a great opportunity, not just for me, but you know, to be able to provide that for my child because representation and access are so important.
Yeah, and that's very true. Especially with access. You don't have the access and you don't even have the opportunity to go in that way. Can't all right, so you mentioned something that just want to dive into that people may not know about is you mentioned mobile labs. Can you break that down for us? Like for the person who's never heard this term, what exactly is a mobile lab?
It's definitely up and coming, and it's very niche, and it's something that we've been trying to do. I think the Mobile Lab Coalition that I just recently am a board member of that has been around about 8 years or so, but it's about bringing access to the community and like not being confined to the four walls that we're, you know, traditionally confined to, and people coming to us. So making things mobile does a lot for our community because we can go to them, meet them in their third space, and be a part of the community without them all coming, you know, to us. Eliminate some transportation barriers, and we're a guest in their space. So the Mobile Lab Coalition works really hard to help put STEM-related ideas, labs. We have an art lab, art studio, apologies, an art studio on wheels, and they go out into the community in various aspects. And this is a global community that we work with. So not only are we providing these services here in the States, but we are doing this worldwide. And being able to, like I said, break those barriers with those four walls and having the expectation that everything has to happen in my space. When I'm happy to join people in their third spaces and build those communities and providing access for students, not just students, but you know, everybody.
And I love that. With mobile labs, just the concept of it, right? Going in somebody else's space, and then showing them opportunity. And I want to talk about that with you. So when you were in like New York, and I know you're doing that now in Denver, but how exactly do you approach going into a whole different community, that you're not part of in per se? How do you approach that in that space?
This is a great question, and we're still learning a lot about that because the mobile lab is a kind of a new concept that we're fostering. And actually, this year our theme is going to be centered around that a lot of DEI work. How do we enter a space in the appropriate way with respect and treating people like we're their guest, right? Like we're not hosting this, we're coming into their space as guest. So how do we make sure that we're being sensitive and that we're respecting the things that our culture that already has established? Like how do we bridge those gaps? So it's a really good question. Me personally, I try really hard to find key members of the community in different places and say and build those relationships with them first. So that way we have an advocate. We have someone that the community trusts already on our side, so that bridges the gap, right? So we're not just like being invasive or just showing up and saying, here we are, let's do science. But if we have a key member or key members of the society, of the community, I apologize, on our side, that also helps people like build that trust a little bit, especially with science and in our current culture after the COVID and the pandemic, there's a lot of disconnect and like misinformation, and the media has spun some things. And we want to be able to start building that trust again with the community, and it could be kind of off-putting if we don't do it the right way.
I think you're spot on with that. I couldn't agree more. Especially being authentic in a community, because you don't want to come off in there and be a fake savior, and then they immediately feel that, they don't feel the authentic side of that.
And I'm very lucky positioned to be here at the museum. I do spend a lot of time going to community events that are already happening, and meeting people and saying, hey, I work at the museum. How can we serve this community or what do you need? And be able to build those networking opportunities and realizing that sometimes I know people that could help fulfill the need that, you know, might not be me. right? Like taking myself out of the equation sometimes and matching people up together so we're not working in silos, that we are working because we're all trying to serve the same community essentially.
Yeah.
And sometimes we get so like focused that we're not able to see the other people who are doing things in the community as well. And I want to be like, let's build a longer table. How can we all come to the table together and serve the community? Because we can do so much more if we're working together as a group rather than five people here and two people over here and five people over there. Like, how can we, you know, work together and provide access to our community in various ways, not just through science, but also if there's a food need or if there's a housing need, like how can we, you know, better serve our community? Because if we can't fulfill the basics, we can't get to the next step, right? Like if people are worried about housing or food or, you know, the transportation, getting back and forth to the science museum or whatever, how can we ever move past that if we can't, you know, fulfill those basic human needs?
Yeah, exactly. It's a saying comes to my mind, what it takes a village to raise a child, right? So where it's like you need all those different things because a child needs all those things, you know, and sometimes they can't get it from their house, but they can get it from somebody else.
So
you mentioned the museum. So how'd you get from New York to Denver in your current position now?
Like I said, it's a pretty niche kind of job. There's not a lot of people who are running around with CDLs and in the STEM community and running mobile labs. So I was doing that there in New York City, and the Denver Museum of Nature and Science had a mobile museum experience that got launched right before COVID and then shut down because of COVID. And then we're ready to relaunch it. And they're looking for somebody to fill that gap there to help get it back on the road, to drive, also support the team, do the community work, like the groundwork that needs to be done to be able to launch this successfully. And that's how I got here. They found me through another coworker who had moved from New York as well.
So it's breaking down your role or what you do now is a lot. That makes sense.
It is. Yeah.
I guess even with mindset, I even think because it takes a lot to go out to the community, right, and be the foot on the ground. What is something that you had to overcome for this type of position? What did you have to overcome in your mind to even be able to do something like that?
Some of it just had to be like being my authentic self, and not like misrepresenting myself, right? Like going out into the community as myself, and not as a person whose like goal is to bring people to me, but how can I better serve you? Like realizing that it's not about what I want to do, but it's about what my community needs, and thinking to myself too, like how can I be a catalyst? Like how can I help rather than, you know, I'm here to fix problems, right? Like, you know what I'm trying to say? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Talking about the not trying to be a savior, right? You're just trying to show what the possibilities can be,
right? And being a good representative too. Like I'm not someone, if you picture in your mind who works at a museum, right? And then it's me that shows up, and I'm very like I try to be very warm and authentic, and those little things really matter for people. When I say, hey, like let me meet you at the museum and walk you into my space, like let me, you know, take the 5 minutes. Those things really matter, especially if you're coming to a place that you've never been before, and creating that sense of being longing to like show, especially our young folks, that this is a possibility, that this is something that if I can't, like, you know, to see representation in different fields, you know, even with driving, to get a lot of reactions from the students when you pull up and be like, wow, right? Because they're not expecting this is, you know, and that shock factor, it really sticks with people, and it matters, you know, to be able to see yourself like, man, what a cool job. That's something that I could do, and have someone that's relatable and on your level, and just coming from where I have been before to where I am now, right? To kind of empower and maybe inspire people too. Like the road is tough, but it is doable.
I couldn't agree. It's overcoming adversity, right? At the end of the day, that's essentially what you have to be able to do. So can you talk about your program as far as How exactly now are y'all impacting the community, and then what are the goals that y'all have for y'all program?
Sure. So just for background, the community cruiser, the Curiosity Cruiser that we have now is a product of what the community wanted. There was a lot of researching and talking to communities like, hey, what can we do to be a better part of the community that we serve? And this was one of the results of those conversations. So last year we saw about 18,000 people out in the community of Denver had some kind of contact with about 18,000 people. This year, our goal is a little bit more than that. And part of what we're doing is it's a lot. So like we wear a lot of hats and do many things. But part of what we do is we have some long-standing relationships that we are continuing to foster through science and STEM education. And some of it's reforming, trying to identify new places that we are underserved that maybe we haven't been to yet, or maybe our connection's not as strong. And I spend a lot of time trying to identify those pockets of places around Denver where we just don't have contact, and we're not providing as much access as we could be, and we're trying to consistently, constantly improve that. So that might mean maybe I go to the Lunar Moon Festival and meet the people who are already in the community, who are serving that community, and try to build those connections and networks, have coffee, have lunch, talk about what that community needs, and if the museum can, help fill those needs, or if I know someone, or we might know someone that could fill those needs.
So this, I'm very curious about the museum culture, because you are one of the only people I know that is in a museum like that. So how is that, when you transition to this new role being at a museum? Is it what you expected, or how is that for somebody who,
Well, it's been different. A part of it also is I'm from New York, so the culture shock here has been, pretty. I want to say that I'm a New Yorker at heart. Like I am originally from Ohio, so I am a weird mix of nice and direct. But we'll get there. So some of it is definitely from East Coast to Denver has been an interesting transaction. Like, but I am growing and learning as a person because of all of the kind of things that are happening around me. I feel like the museum was working hard to accomplish some DEI initiatives, and it's a big thing that's happening all over the place right now. And a lot of museums and institutes and people are starting to realize that this is a thing that we need to be working on. So we are taking steps, but have we got there and are we perfect? Not yet. So there's still times where we are still identifying places. I heard something from someone, a speaker, and they said, like, if we are not actively trying to provide access and actively trying to make sure that our workspaces are diversity and there's equality, then we are inactively promoting the biases, right? Like we're inactively falling back into the things that, even if we're not aware of it. So a lot of all training has been going on. We have meetings. A lot of times we just, I feel like I have to sometimes advocate a little bit, and not because anyone is purposely like being, but like I said, sometimes these things just inherently happen because it's not, in the front of our minds. So
Because
we're growing.
that's interesting, because I've never thought about that before. Because even in the sciences and chemistry, it's the same issue. We want more people to be in the sciences and have that exposure. But even in the museums, when I think about it, I'm not sure, but it's most of the people in the museums, white females, I'm assuming, or white males.
Yeah, we have, and we also have a really strong Hispanic population here in Denver, and we're working really hard to like make sure things are bilingual for the Spanish community. And right now, I'm working hard to reach out to the Black community because that is one of our underserved communities here in Denver. And it's some of it is just space. Like there's like 6,000 Black identifying people here in Denver, but they're so spaced out. Sometimes it's hard to like find, right? And that's part of what I'm doing now is just trying to figure out how we can be like better, at serving those communities that we're not doing a great job at sometimes.
And That's so it's hard, right? It's hard trying to get to those communities.
It
It's
is. And especially
some
coming from the East Coast and like not knowing anybody. So I have to start from scratch, right? Like I don't know anybody. So I have to actively seek out people that, that might be, the key members that I'm looking for, right? Of the society, of the community. There's certain like folks that really are like people gravitate towards them in the community. And I'm trying to find those people and start to build those communities, not just for myself, but also for my son, right? Because we don't know anybody. So we have to build those communities, not just for work, but for personal reasons too. Like we can't, no person is an island. We all need that kind of support. So, and it would be unfair for me to like deny my child access to folks that are, doing great things in the community that he also needs.
And that's perfectly true. How have you just felt in this case, being a single mother, raising your son in this environment? How do you navigate that? Because I'm a parent, and it's tough. It's
Yeah,
tough,
it is. Oh, it is.
So.
I am very lucky. My son gets to enjoy being at the museum if I have to bring him with me. And it's a struggle. I'll be honest with you. Sometimes things aren't not perfect, but like being able to work at a museum or previously in New York at a Biobus or on a bookmobile, like it also the one of the pros of being here is that he gets access and like kind of unlimited access to the museum, right? Like there's a difference between spending a 45-minute field trip and then being very comfortable here at a museum where there are scientists who are want to talk to him about rocks. Like my kid is really into geodes and rocks, and there's a person here who's like a professional who that's all they do for a living, and be able to provide him access, and everyone being so gracious enough to be excited about what they do, but also excited to share what they do. Like that passion, especially when you have children, when they're interested in something, that's like that's their whole world, right? And then to have someone who knows what they're talking about and be able to help them grow in the field of geology or entomology. Like my kid loves bugs. All kids love bugs. We have bugs exhibits right now at the museum, and be able to be here and see how they clean a cage and touch the bugs. Like it's a little different than just being here one day for a field trip. So I'm super lucky to be able to bring him to the museum with me. And then I have the support of my family in Ohio. So every summer when we're on break, he gets to go back and hang out with my mom and my dad and all of the family there. So he still has those real strong connections with his cousins and things like that.
It's that the movie that came to my mind is The Night at Museum.
Oh yeah.
With Ben Stiller, how all
Everything comes
everything comes up.
alive. Yeah, we were actually in that museum in New York. That's a good one. It's not quite like set up like the movie, but you should still go if you ever get a chance to go. It's the Natural History Museum there in New York City.
That's cool. It's very interesting. Just thinking about how you approach different things. I'm curious, what is your biggest inspiration? What kind of led you to go this route?
I feel like I have an anti-inspiration, is there a word for that? because of the kind of tough upbringing that I had. I didn't have a lot of access to things, and just growing up in the foster care system and with my biological parents. And I just don't want that for my son. I want better opportunities, more chances for him. We're also very, like, I try to think to myself, what would my, what would. I, where would I be right now? Or what would happen if I, don't create this access for my son and then kind of do the opposite of how I was raised? And so far, that's been working pretty well. I just want to be able to give him the best life possible. And since it was like my decision to bring him into the world, the least I can do is make sure that he has like the best start that I possibly can provide. So, and don't get me wrong, like I said, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes we're just eating noodles. And cereal for breakfast or cereal for dinner, but in the long run though, he's yeah, so maybe I'm inspired to for my child.
No,
Maybe
I
that's the
totally
right
get that.
answer.
Providing a future or a different life that you didn't necessarily have. I think every parent's trying to do it. I'm trying to do that with my daughters. You know what I'm saying? To where it's just you're exposing them to different things that you understand now that exposure is key and it's important. So you are doing everything your will to give him this different access to different things. And yeah, I feel like most parents, if not all, want this for their child. So I definitely agree. So I guess I'm a little curious, how was because you want this new life for your child and different things like that, I guess I'm curious about the foster care system. We hear different things about it, but just based on your experience, what is your experience from that, and what do you think about the system now?
I'm not short. I'm older than you think I am. It's been over 20 years, so it's been a while. But I'm sure it hasn't changed much. My parents, my foster or my adoptive parents, are still foster parents to other people. And it's my understanding it hasn't really changed much. They don't really set you up to be to the college path. Like, for example, I was very interested in going to college because I am very stubborn and I am very determined to not end up like, unfortunately, my biological parents, and I want to go to college. There's no pathway set up for kids that want to go to college. When I applied, there's a scholarship. I think four other kids applied for the scholarship to help pay for college through the foster care system because it's not a pathway that's promoted. Just going to college, being able to do the visiting with the college was a battle for me, like getting permissions and having like certain people had to sign things. Like, just it makes it so hard to even get to the college to do the viewing, let alone like trying to get there. And unfortunately, there's some, when you turn 18, some foster parents, they no longer get finances for you, and you're kind of on your own, right? So if you're unlucky to have a foster family that is in it for maybe not the right reasons, like, and also like, when you turn 18, you're an adult, and they like kind of give you 6 months to pay for an apartment for you for 6 months. And they do set you up with a job, but normally it's minimum wage, think fast food. And then after that, there's no support. So how can you be successful at 18 or 19 years old with no support, right? And the only people that you have known are where you came from before, which might not foster a good situation, right? And for me, some of that family that I had known before when I turned 18, they couldn't understand, like, why are you going to college? What are you doing, like, right? Or if there's addiction involved, or all those problems that had led up to me being in foster care in the first place are still there. Like, the underlying causes are still there. And that's not a very supportive environment for someone who's like, I want to get a degree, or I want to do this, or I want to do that. So the system is pretty broken as far as like trying to support higher education in many ways. They just don't really set you up for that. And when I said I want to go to college, there was just like silence from my caseworker, like, what? Like, this is something I haven't heard of before. But in some ways, I've been very lucky to have some key people in my life that have been supportive and have seen, like, we all need that. Like, think about if I had gone to college without that support system, as a young person, like, how could you expect to make it, right? Without having at least the support of a family.
Community aspects, the family all being there to help you get through these things, right? Overcome that adversity.
That you might not be able to do. And like, even if a foster child said, I want to go to college, and they were in the same situation that I was, there's just not a lot of support there, right? Like, the school had, like, for example, the school had closed down during Thanksgiving break. The dorms all closed. I didn't have anywhere to go. Like, my foster family lived 3 hours away. We weren't in a great position right when that happened. What was I supposed to do, right? I was very lucky. I had an art director. She's like, well, you can't sleep in your car. I'm not supposed to do this. But she went out of her way to make sure that, like, I had a place to stay during that long weekend because, there weren't a lot of options. For a young person without a job who's going to school full time.
I guess with your past experience, I guess I'm curious, how do you, when you're talking to these different people in the communities, right? And how do you break that mindset, these generational curses, to where it's like, because you can talk to a certain type of person where it's like they got this thing in their mind, and because now you've gone on the other side and you see the possibilities, How do you even break that down, or how can you get through to them sometimes?
Yeah, we definitely, a lot of the people that we work with are students and children, and I understand that's very important that we're doing that. But also, if we don't have the support of the community and the family behind that, the children can't really succeed and grow. And in some ways, it's important that we're including the family when we're talking about, STEM and science and career paths, and that they have a clear understanding, of why it's important, but also providing access for them to experience so that they have that same little moment that the kids are having. Right? So they're like, oh, I can see why this is like could be a thing that we could do, because we need that support from the community and from the family so that we all can move forward together. And then again, like sometimes it's just meeting people and just being open and honest about, where you were, where you've been, so that there's this moment where they're like, okay, we can bond over some of these things because we have been through some of the same things, some of the same through adversities. Like I've been, I work with people who are in low income situations or on the border of, situations, no transportation, and I've been there too, right? So just having that, some of that shared background and saying like, hey, like I'm not a person who's like, it's okay. Like, I'm not gonna, make it seem like everything is good. It's gonna be fine, because honestly, it might not be, right? So coming down to people in a real personal and authentic way really matters.
That's so true. Because they just gonna like we've been mentioning, it's just like they just gonna feel it. They will feel it, and then they will shy away from you.
Right. And any good intentions that you might have had will be gone before anything has ever started. So.
So I guess what how are y'all what are some different things that y'all have coming up in this specific case in Denver's community that people might be interested in?
In Denver right now, we are talking a lot about a sedia. So it'll be like it's a, I think, a Mexican holiday where we celebrate children. We're bringing a lot of community partners here to the museum for that. We continually have free days, which creates access for folks because the ticket barrier, price of the barrier, ticket barrier could be kind of a lot sometimes, and people are like, eh. But if it's free, then more people are more likely to come. And then the cruiser itself is looking, we already have, I think, 20 bookings for this summer, and some of those include the Juneteenth Festival, the Black Arts Festival. We'll be going to the Dragon Boat Festival to support our Southeast Asian community. And in the past, we've done the Ukrainian Festival, where we're trying to find places, those third places where people are already gathered, and being able to be there and, do fun science with them too. So it's not as, we want to be approachable and provide access. And everything that we offer is in Spanish and in English. So that also, language is not a barrier. We're still working on trying to find ways to, make it accessible to people with other languages, but Spanish is our second highest language here in Denver.
No, it sounds like great events coming up very soon. I'm
Yeah.
excited. I'm excited in that case for y'all. I guess what is a piece of advice that you can give to someone seeking or aspiring to be in this career that you're in now?
My advice is realizing it's going to be hard and not letting those roadblocks stop you. Sometimes people will like face a mountain and be like, how am I going to get up this mountain? Like, this is an obstacle that I can't, but we need to, that I can't overcome. But maybe it's more like, okay, either it's step by step, but also there's other ways, right? Like, just to use the same analogy, maybe I go around that mountain, maybe I go through the mountain, maybe I find a different path, right? So don't let, the no stop you from achieving your goals. Like, you do have to be stubborn, and just realizing that, like, sometimes things aren't going to work out for you, and that's okay. And I would also say, build a community of like-minded people who are going to support you. It doesn't have to be financially, but mostly that, excuse me. You're surrounded by people who care and want to see you succeed. And if, the people that you're around are not those people, then you need to go find the people that will, that are those people that will do that for you. Because without that support and that, like, the people who are cheering you on, You know, it makes it so much harder. I'm not saying it's impossible. And be realistic, you know, just be realistic about it. Like, what do they say? Like, shoot for the star, aim for the moon, but land in the stars or something like that. Right. And just realize sometimes we have to take those risks. Like, moving from Ohio to New York was a huge risk. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a job lined up. I was like, I'm just gonna go there and drive something, and something will happen. Being able to take those risks, it's hard, you know, and just realizing that, like, you know, take a step back sometimes. My advice is just, you know, believe in yourself a lot too, right? Be stubborn when you need to be, you know, be pigheaded about this, because if you don't make it happen, who else will, you know?
I love all that you mentioned, especially believing yourself. I feel like people, especially now, just don't believe or have the confidence that they can do something. And in your case, I love your story, right? Because you picked up all your things and you moved up to New York. And most people, it's very uncommon for people like people that they live somewhere, they grow up there, they die there. That's it.
But it's so
You
important to like embrace the change. Like, one thing about life is that things are going to change. And instead of like not being able to deal with it, embrace it, because you don't really know what this change is going to do for you. Like, it could be positive. I mean, sure, this change could be bad, but also it could be make your life better, right? So instead of like shying away from change, and I just jump into the unknown, and I'm very like, let's see what happens, right? Like, what's the worst that could happen is that I will fail miserably and have to move back to Ohio. So other than that, like, there's no reason for me not to try, you know, to give it a go. And I want to show that example to my son too, right? Like, sometimes we just have to get out there and try.
It's the growth mindset, right? To where it's like you have to get out of your comfort zone. If that's the city that you live in or the people that you are around. But eventually, if you realize that they're having a negative impact, or if you just want to grow, there's no better way to grow than just getting out of your comfort zone. And I feel like you're exactly right with that description. Thank you so much, Danielle, for
Oh, you're so
today.
welcome.
It was a pleasure talking to you. Can you leave the people like where can they find you at? Any social
Oh,
medias
yeah,
or?
sure. If you want to find me on my personal life, you can find me on Instagram, and it's 3 M's, like MMM, and then Danielle 5 at Instagram. You feel free to email me, look me up online, and I'm happy to provide support for, you know, people. If they just feel like, hey, I need to talk to someone, like, I'm here for you, because I needed that. There were moments when I needed that, and if I have the ability to do that for somebody else, it's very important for me to inspire people and just, you know, be there to listen. Sometimes you just need someone to hear you. So just, you know, tag me, drop me a line, call me on the phone, whatever you want to do is fine.
Great. So once again, everybody, thank you for tuning in today, and thank you to our special guest, Danielle. This is Don't Be Scared the podcast. Thank you.
Everyone.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Don't Be Scared. We hope you found this discussion valuable, helpful, and informative. You can reach us through our website, social media, or by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. 5 stars, y'all. And don't forget to check out our resources and services at Don't Be Scared, where we help organizations and individuals engage with science and pursue their dreams in the field.